would talk to the animals. Just imagine it, chatting with a chimp and chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting with a cheetah. What a neat achievement it would be if we could.
Hello and welcome back to Pet Chat. This is Jacques Doolittle, and I want to welcome everyone, all our listeners on 1180 WFYL, to another version of Pet Chat. Today, we're going to talk to Pat Hairston, and she's of Canines for Service, and we'll get to her in just a moment. Wanted to do a little bit of business. My company, Soap and Bean Pet Care, is a pet care provider in the King of Prussia and surrounding areas and the main line. And we do daily dog walks. We take care of all sorts of pets while people are out and about at work, on vacation. We do overnights for people that are out for a week or so and they want somebody to watch their house along with their pets. So anybody that needs pet care service, please contact Soap and Bean Pet Care. We're www.soph-bean-petcare.com. That's our website. All the information is there. So that's a little bit of that business. And if you have any questions and would like to call in and vent a question, we would love to hear from you. We're at 610-783-6394, or you could just email us at info@1180wfyl.com. Either way, you could contact us. So we're going to now talk to Canines for Service, and welcome Pat.
Well, thank you, Jacques. We're happy to be a part of this pet chat today.
And we're happy to have you as well. So why don't you, I guess, start off by telling us a little bit about Canines for Service and what they do.
Okay. Canines for Service provides people with physical disabilities highly skilled service dogs. That is really our primary mission, what the organization was founded on. But since being founded 19 years ago, we've sort of grown the organization. And in the state of North Carolina, at least for this time, we offer people and their pets a chance to get trained and certified to volunteer in the community in a pet therapy program, as well to work with children who are struggling with their reading in a sort of Canines for Literacy, where the child actually reads to the dog for 20 minutes a week. To round out the program, we train service dogs for our injured and wounded veterans.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask about that. In fact, last week we had a guest on that was talking about a reading program. And it was really interesting that, you know, kids will pick out the books. And I thought at first they'd pick out, you know, dog and cat books. But they pick out their, you know, favorite books, whether it's a princess or, you know, whatever. And I guess it really works with the kids. What words they don't know, they sometimes make up words. They look at the pictures and tell the story based on the pictures they see. But overall, they say it really improves their reading capabilities.
It really does. You know, we've been running the program since 2002 and served probably nearing 2,000 children. And of the children that we actually, you know, work with the schools to keep kind of records of their reading ability, about 90% of the children have actually improved the reading skills. And
that's fantastic.
It is fantastic. And the schools don't always see it in the reading, but they see it in the other programs as well. You know, they're willing to raise their hand in social studies and, you know, get more involved in school and check out books. And, you know, it really is a fun, non-judgmental way to interest a child in learning to love to read.
That was exactly what I was just going to say. It's not only improving their reading, but improving their desire to read.
Yes. Yeah, and some have come in to tell us, do you know what I did last night after dinner? Well, I read to my cat, or I read to my goldfish. So it carries over from the environment they're reading in into their homes.
Right. So they don't just read to the service dog when they go to see the service dog, or the service dog comes to them. They continue it with their own pets.
Yes.
And that's good. And they'll read to a cat or whatever. Now, you said North Carolina's and multiple years you've been in business. How many states are you in, and locations, that kind of stuff?
We're really just located physically in one state, and that's where our offices are, down in Wilmington, North Carolina,
okay,
along the coast. So as you watch the hurricanes, you know, roll in, we're always hoping they kind of cut north and go back out to
right.
sea.
Right, pray for Wilmington.
And we actually place our service dogs for the non-veteran community within about a 10-mile distance from us. So really, we do serve up into the Pennsylvania community, pretty much all the way down to Florida, almost all the way to the Mississippi River. But for our veterans, we're actually able to serve them nationally.
Now, aggressively go out looking for veterans, or you wait for calls to come in and someone says, you know, either I'm a vet, or you know, I'm married to one, or I know of one that would really need a service dog? How does that process work?
Well, because the decision to want a service dog is so very personal, we generally don't go out and look for clients. Nor do we actually have to go out to look for clients. We're probably getting somewhere between 60 to 80 calls a month of veterans and or spouses or caregivers or medical providers that know someone or have someone who a service dog could be beneficial to.
Right.
So we kind of get connected through many different sources. It could be the loved one. It could be a caregiver. Could be the veteran themselves. It could be their case manager at the Veterans Administration. Could be a counselor. So the people would come to us and inquire about our process. We provide an application to them, and that kind of gets the whole system started.
Right. Now, in the past, you would see a service dog with a blind person, and maybe that service dog would be trained to become that person's own property, and they're just going to be with that pet. Does that happen, or is that a dog that's trained to be a service dog that's already owned by, say, a handicapped person, or say a blind individual, and then once the dog is trained, it just becomes theirs. How does that process work?
We actually, at the same time we're accepting applications for people for a service dog, we're bringing rescue dogs into our program and we're training them. So all of unique to our organization is all of our dogs are from rescues or shelters. We don't have a breeding program.
Okay.
Which would be
go ahead.
Very common in some programs.
Now,
and so
go ahead. I'm interrupting.
We're training our dogs in the core skills that we feel the dog needs. And our core skills are about 90 skills. So that includes basic obedience, sit down, stay calm, walking nicely on a leash. It includes what we call the socialization, you know, going out to the movie theater, to the restaurants, to the Walmart, to Target, to the wherever, to make sure the dog can focus and do its skills in those environments. And then as the dog advances in its training, it's going to learn the higher level skills, the opening a door, picking up dropped items, loading a washing machine, unloading a dryer.
Wow.
No, we don't trade for spouses, just in case.
Getting a beer out of the refrigerator.
Well, I'm not going to give you your beverage preference.
Okay, all right.
You know, it's what we call a placed retrieval. So if you always put waters on the third shelf in the refrigerator, and today you put the ketchup, and you ask the dog to go get you a water, you're probably going to have ketchup.
Right, right, right.
So our dogs are trained to support someone with a physical need.
Right.
Loss of limbs, spinal cord injury, maybe MS, cerebral palsy, anything that prevents them from having the ability to, adequately walk, or balance issues.
Right. Now, does the dog become the individual's pet forever, or is it a lease, or how does that work?
Well, what we do is once we have our clients and they're approved and we have our dogs that are fully trained, we make the match, and the person receiving that service dog will come and train with us for a week, and it's one-on-one training, so it's the person receiving the dog and our trainer working with the dog to teach that person how to use the dog.
Right.
At the conclusion of the week, they take the dog home. For all practical purposes, the dog is theirs. We want them to bond with the dog. We want them to love the dog, because that forms the basis for that dog wanting to work for them.
Right.
But from the legal perspective, we legally own our dogs for 3 years. What that gives us the ability to do is cover liability insurance for the individual with the disability. And at the point our dogs are ready to be placed, we don't consider the liability to be the dog might bite, but we consider the liability to be they're in a restaurant, the tail happens to be out a little too far from under the table, and the wait staff trips over the dog and they break a wrist. So instead of the wait staff or the restaurant basically asking the person with the disability to provide for that,
the insurance,
our organization,
right,
would. The insurance would.
Exactly.
So we cover the insurance.
Now, in that 3-year period, do you not retrain but continue to train the dog? So your trainer would come to the site, the home of the individual, and do advanced training, or is when the training is done, it's done?
Pretty much when the training is done, it's done. In the perspective of the dog has all the key skills that it's going to need to serve that person. Because in the last few months, once we've partnered, before the person comes into town to actually train with their dog, we're fine-tuning, things like, does the dog need to work off your right side or your left? What type of refrigerator do you have? What type of light switches are in your house? Is your washing machine a top load or a front load? And that's how we work to kind of customize the dog for the person that's receiving it.
Right. It would be really tough for a dog to unload a top loading washing machine.
Yeah, they can't do that. Sorry. You need somebody else to do that.
Right.
But then we follow up with them, and it's quite extensive for the first probably the first year, it's very extensive. The second year, we're kind of backing off. They're working well together as a team. The third year, we'll touch base with them once every 6 months. If during that time period they need additional training, or the person's disability worsens and they need the dog to do something else, we are there to help provide that support for them
now,
and fine-tune the dog again.
Gotcha. Now, if, say, it's a blind person and they have the dog for 3 years, after the 3-year period, you don't take the dog back. It's theirs then?
Absolutely. We will not take the dog back at
okay.
that point. If they're
still using it.
They basically, if they've cared for the dog, if the dog has been, appropriately vet cared for,
right,
they're seeing it, it's heartworm preventative, flea and tick control, they're using that dog, then basically at that 3-year period, we release the dog to their ownership.
And they would, at that time, provide their own insurance pickup. Would you suggest or sell the insurance that you have been providing to them going forward?
We have not been able to transfer our insurance in any way. That's something the individual would have to seek out. I mean, if they're a homeowner, usually it's a rider on a homeowner's policy, but there are sources that will insure for liability. So now let's advance a little bit further and get to the harder end of the situation. The dog has been with that person for a number of years. the dog is slowing down, is aging, maybe, you know, can no longer really work for the person. But that client that we served, we often tell them you're kind of stuck with us for life.
And do you then bring in a young dog while the other one's still there and sort of one is training the other, or until the older dog is no longer, say, mobile, and then you just switch? How does that work?
Well, it's really up to our client. We have a number of options for them. We would certainly, they move to the head of our list. So if they have to retire their current service dog, or they know retirement is coming, we move them to the head of our list. We reevaluate if their needs have changed. And then the next available dog that's appropriate for the person is provided to them. We'll bring them back into town for some training. It's usually, you know, shorter time. Instead of 5 to 7 days, it may only be 3. And then the person can decide, can I financially afford my retired service dog and my new service dog? If I can't, is there a family member who can take care of my retired service dog? If that's not an option, we always have a waiting list of people who say they want to adopt a retired service dog.
Now, if, say, my service dog is retired because he's old, but I just want to keep him around as a pet, I bring in a new service dog, it's now upgraded and trained, and now I just have the old service dog hanging around as a pet, is that doable?
Yep, that's doable. For our organization, it is. And that just happened this past spring. We had a young woman, we've just served her with her third service dog. And her second guy was just getting old, slowing down.
Right, right.
You know, 10-year-old lab, really can't keep the pace anymore. So he's a happy pet, happy to stay all snuggled up in the bed at home while the young kid goes out and works.
All right, well, that's good. That's really neat.
Yeah.
Now, is that a unique feature of your service or other canine service dog providers do similar things? What makes you unique?
What makes us unique really is the fact that we're using all rescue dogs.
Oh, okay.
In the service dog industry, there is a higher probability an organization has a breeding program. And so they're breeding their own Labradors or Golden Retrievers, like the Seeing Eye programs do that. They have a very extensive breeding program. For us, we feel that there's so many very valuable dogs that are discarded and, you know, heading along the path to be euthanized that we want to give those dogs a chance. So when we're looking to add a dog to the program, we scout at our local shelters with our local rescue groups and, you know, we temperament test the dog, we health screen them, and then they'll come in to start their training. And they'll train for upwards of about a year, some a little bit longer, some a little bit less, just depending on maturity. But a typical example is we have a female lab mix. She's about 80 pounds.
She's a big one.
In line. She's a big one. She's a big girl. Part of the problem is the big girl doesn't know she's so big. But she was next in line to be euthanized at the shelter. She was in a family home. She was surrendered by the owners. She had never had any training, not even basic obedience, knocking the children down, mouthing the children. You know, she's a great dog. You know, she's going to be a phenomenal service dog once we get her to calm down a little bit and focus on what she needs to do. But so we'll continue to train her and work with her and, you know, get that, you know, young puppiness out of her,
right.
And probably in 6 to 8 months she'll be ready to be working for real. So.
Now you said there are dog training programs for seeing eye dogs. Do you have a program for seeing eye dogs with you for your rescue animals?
We don't. We serve only the physically impaired individual. And what I like to compare it to, and I'm not trying to be offensive to anyone, but I do the comparison of the seeing eye dog really is the office worker. They have to be able to think and make decisions to do their job. The service dog that we're training is almost the construction worker. They have to be able to take directions and follow orders to do their job. So that's how I've tried to kind of differentiate between the two types of training.
Right. Well, that's a good breakdown. Yeah, I was just thinking a service dog could be trained to do anything. And I kept saying in this last segment, a blind person. I wish you would have corrected me because you don't work with blind people.
No, but it's not uncommon for people to say that, and I generally don't correct because the services for the blind are the oldest and most established services of service dogs in the country.
Right.
That's 100 years old.
Yeah, and isn't it not true that at first that's all there was, blind service dogs? There were not service dogs like that you're providing.
Exactly. The only service there was a guide dog. About 40 years ago now is when the dogs for the physically impaired started to come into being. And organizations were actually, starting to train the dogs to help somebody in a wheelchair, a walker, that type of thing.
Right. Now, if someone was going to contact your business, how would they do that? Say any of our listeners right now, if they were looking to get a service dog or knew someone that needed a service dog, how would they get in touch with you?
Certainly they can call our office. Our telephone number is 910-362-8181.
What's that number again?
910-362-8181.
Okay.
They can email us, and our email is ungodly long, information, all spelled out, at canines for service.org.
Canines for Service, of course.
Right, .org. Or visit our website, www.caninesforservice.org, all spelled out.
Right, right. Okay, and you're in Wilmington, and I guess that's where you're calling in from, correct?
It certainly is.
How's the weather down there?
The weather is quite warm today. We have heat indexes in the hundreds, the low hundreds.
Oh, wow. And
yeah,
I've driven by it. I've driven to Florida on 95 twice, and mm-hmm. past Wilmington. Looks like when I go over the bridge, I look over my shoulder, and there's Wilmington. This little conclave, and it looks like a really neat little town.
It is a neat town. It's kind of a blend of old and new, and tourism, and homegrown locals, and it's a fun place, and it sure beats the snow from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I bet it does. I have another condo down close to the beach in Lewis, Delaware, and Lewis is an old town, small and quaint, probably similar to Wilmington.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
Okay, so we're believe it or not, we're done with our first segment, and folks, again, if you are looking for a service dog or know someone that needs one, call in that number, that 910-362-8181. And do you answer the phone, Pat, or are you just a marketing person?
No, but I'll either answer the phone or another staff person, Christy, will. We're kind of a small but powerful organization.
Okay, well, great. We'll talk to you in a minute, and want to thank everybody for tuning in to Pet Chat 1180 WFYL. This is Jacques Doolittle.
I'd study elephant.
Hi, everybody. Phil Valentine here. It's great to be back on the air in Philly, and especially when my show is being broadcast from the Cradle of Liberty, Valley Forge area, home of freedom-loving patriots both in times past and today, right here on WFYL 1180 AM.
1, 2, 3.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gossett, inviting you to join me for Backstage Jazz. I'll spend an hour each week taking you behind the music and into the lives of America's top jazz musicians. Experience live jazz music and connect with the artists through backstage interviews. Join us right here for this season of Backstage Jazz. Broadcasting Saturday afternoon at 4 and streaming Sunday night at 6 on WFYL.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom shining light throughout the tri-state area.
If you like Car Talk, catch Under the Hood Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 to 7. Exclusively streaming on 1180WFYL.com. Worldwide on your computer or mobile device. Stream Under the Hood this Saturday morning from 6 to 7 at 1180WFYL.com or on your favorite mobile device. Go to our website at 1180WFYL.com to find out more.
Hi, friends. Janet Parshall here, host of In the Market with Janet Parshall. I'm excited about partnering with 1180 AM WFYL to bring you a fast-paced conversation every Sunday. As you listen to In the Market, we'll examine major news stories and issues, equipping you to be bold when voicing truth in a confused and chaotic culture. I look forward to engaging my new friends at 1180 AM WFYL every Sunday at 12:05 p.m. on In the Market.
Hey, everybody, this is Laura Ingram. Thanks for listening to my show and the other great programs carried live on WFYL 1180 AM, broadcasting from the historic Cradle of Liberty area, Valley Forge and Philadelphia.
Stand in the Gap Weekend with Sam Rohr and Gary Dull of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network features a message from one of the nearly 3,000 church leaders that are members of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network. The mission is to build a permanent network of pastors across the state that are dedicated to affirming the authority of Scripture and taking seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Every day, we're working to impact the nation's values by encouraging pastors to lead their churches in addressing today's toughest issues, including the deterioration of traditional marriage, pornography, sexual permissiveness, and abortion. You're invited to join us in the battle for truth.
Airing Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. and streaming Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. on our website, 1180WFYL.com.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Just imagine it, chatting with a chimp and chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting with a cheetah. What a neat achievement it would be.
Hi, this is Jacques Doolittle. Welcome back to Pet Chat. We've been talking with Pat Hairston with Canines for Service. And before we get back to Pat, just wanted to mention one more time, if anybody is looking for pet care service, contact us at Soap and Bean Pet Care, 610-783-6394. We'll cover your daily, weekly, maybe overnight needs. If you're going on vacation, we don't go on vacation because most of our business is when people are on vacation. So holidays, nights, days, doesn't matter. We're there. We're bonded, licensed, and insured, so you're covered. So that's my little commercial. Now we're back to Pat. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Jacques, how are you?
Good. So why don't you tell me how this company was founded? And how many years ago was it again?
19.
19 years ago. Well, tell me about the founder.
Well, he happens to be my husband. but at the time he founded it, he wasn't. And that's probably not a story we'll go into on air. But he had moved down to Wilmington to follow his previous wife down here. And he had trained for a rather large organization that did service dogs up in the St. Louis, Missouri area. And when he moved down to Wilmington, being welcomed in by the notorious Hurricane Fran, he found that there wasn't a service dog organization in North Carolina, nor was there one in South Carolina for him to volunteer for. So he was working at as a pet trainer, obedience trainer at a local box pet store, and he kept trying to search to find, you know, why would God have given me these skills and this passion to train service dogs? And he still had a dog in advanced training with the other organization, and yet there's no place for me to train. And his answer kept coming back, start your own organization. And he came up with every excuse. I don't know enough about running a nonprofit. I don't have enough money. Where would the resources come from? And on December 1st, 1996, he looked in his mailbox and he had received two checks. One check was from the box store pet place with a bonus check for him having completed some certifications and training. And another check was from a local club doing an honorarium because he had given a speech about service dogs.
Cool.
And that day, yeah, very cool. That day, they had gone so far to circle ads for dogs. He went about an hour and a half northwest from Wilmington and looked at a litter of 13 Labrador puppies and picked the very first puppy for the organization, and that dog's name was Moses.
What was his name? Moses.
Moses.
Oh, okay.
Because he had to lead the way for the rest of the dogs that would be in the program. And so that's how the organization started. It started part-time. It started working out of his home and eventually grew in 2011 to be in a real office space. I came along in 2012, semi-retired, looking for something to do, met them at a local festival.
Right.
Dogs, people with disabilities. I'm all over this. Well, what I brought to the organization was my skills as a kind of operations manager. I'd worked for a rather large pharmaceutical company in various tasks, including managing a archive and project management. And that September of 2002, I actually saw my first client receive his service dog. And it changed my life forever.
Well, that's neat. Were you working for a pharma when you were up in the Pennsylvania area?
I was.
Because you said you were in the Phoenixville and Collegeville area, and that is just pharmas everywhere.
Oh, yes. And it started out in Collegeville, and we got sold, and then the facility was down in Malvern. So very familiar with that area. I loved it. Loved it up there.
Yeah.
But the nice warm weather and the no ice and no snow was calling me.
How big is Wilmington anyway? What's the population?
I think we're about around 100,000.
Okay, so
we're spread out pretty good.
Not tiny, but it's a nice community. It's not a million people, and it's not 20,000, but it's a nice community. You get all the probably great restaurants and you know, like there.
Yep, good restaurants, beautiful beaches, sandy, gorgeous beaches, you know, family-oriented, golf-oriented. For the the folks who like the nightclubs and stuff. There's a big scene downtown for the bars and the nightclubs. So, you know, quite diverse.
Really,
the only thing we don't have close by is big theater, you know, big theater productions.
Oh, so I see. Musicals and the like. Broadway shows, they don't, off-Broadway, they don't hit Wilmington often.
They don't hit Wilmington often, no.
Right. Well, why don't you tell me, where is your company going in the next several years? What's the direction? Where do you see it going?
Really, what we see is, you know, our Canines for Veterans program was actually a triple win program. We used the rescue dogs. We worked with military prisoners to learn new job skills for when they got out of prison. And then the dogs were provided to our wounded and injured veterans. So because of the work we did with military prisoners, we were able to establish a very defined curriculum for training the service dog trainer. So while the service dog is getting trained, so is the person on the other end of the lead. And where we see ourselves going, there is a great need for quality trained service dogs. And that only comes from people who have the right training skills and techniques and know how to train service dogs. So we kind of see a vocational school where people could come to learn to actually train service dogs for people with disabilities and then eventually expand that out a little bit more.
Right. Now you're talking about prisoners. Now is this in the prison, you're going in there and training service dogs, or when people get out of prison?
No, we were actually in a military prison up until the end of June, teaching military prisoners how to train the dogs to be service dogs.
Okay, so they would become the trainers. They weren't needing the service dog. I got you.
No, they weren't needing the service dog. They were becoming the trainers.
Right, so they'd have a skill when they get out of prison.
Right, they actually could earn a U.S. Department of Labor certificate of apprenticeship. So just like an electrician has an apprenticeship certificate or a welder, they would come out with a Department of Labor certificate of apprenticeship. And several of our prisoners who were released, who served their time, they got out, are working for service dog organizations in different areas of the country.
Have you hired ex-prisoner?
We have not been able to.
Okay.
Funding has been our limitation on that. So we would, if funding is in place, which, it, you know, you're always working on that as a nonprofit, we would, there's several we would want to hire in a heartbeat.
Right. Now, how many employees do you have?
Three and a half.
Three and a half.
Don't laugh.
Why? Well, you have a child that is growing into a hole?
Yeah, we have a part-time person.
Oh, okay, I get you.
Full-time people and a part-time person.
And a part-time.
And we're all really multifaceted. I mean, the part-time person, her focus is training service dogs, and she works with clients that we have placed the dogs with from our civilian program or our non-veteran program. The rest of us, we wear many caps. You could be walking dogs and picking up poo, or I could be researching and writing a grant. I recently, the first week in August, I just submitted for a federal grant. So I teach our pet therapy class. I go out and do presentations. I'm on phone calls like this to, you know, inform a community about the work we do. So I call us small but mighty.
Now, do you have a facility there that is like, has a training room or... What is it, the place look like? Or where would somebody come for training?
Yeah, we train in Wilmington, North Carolina. We have a rather small facility. It's only 1,800 square feet. We have an open office where the staff all have their little spaces to work in.
Right.
Usually we are surrounded by dogs in training. And then we have some kennel facility in the back, kennel and training facility in the back. We just recently started housing our dogs there, and most weekends, almost all of the dogs are out in what we call weekend handler homes. So it's someone we've given kind of the basic skills to. So they come on Friday, they pick up a dog, They take it with them. They bring it back to us on Monday morning. It gets the dog out in a private home so we can learn about the dog's behavior in a home. They take it to outings. They go to, you know, grocery store, to restaurants, to the movie, wherever.
Now,
so, and they work training.
Gotcha. Now, I have a house. I've got a certain type of washer, dryer, refrigerator and all. I need a service dog. So that dog has to be, I guess, trained on my environment. So the trainer would come with the dog and go through the routine to teach the dog to open the refrigerator. How does that all work?
It really becomes a positioning or a placement. Once the dog knows the skill, it has to know how to apply it in the person's environment. So let's take a light switch. That's a lot easier. It really is. So your light switches are placed in certain areas in your room. In our facility, we have light switches placed in certain areas. First of all, we have several different levels of light switches because we start them at a low level so they get the concept of turning it on and turning it off. And then it goes up to the next level. And then the third level is actually the, you know, where our light switch is typically placed on a wall. But once the person who receives that dog gets in their home, they can use the tools that we gave them, how to give the dog a command and what command to use for turning on or turning off a light switch. And they have to show the dog where the light switch is in their home.
Now, would it be like a simple command, like, on light switch, off light switch, something like that, or how is that?
We say touch light and touch dark.
Oh, touch light, touch dark. Hey, that's kind of cool because they're with their paw, they're actually touching it.
Well, some of them get creative and actually use their front teeth and on the little switch, and it really, I guess we do care. We don't care how the dog gets that job done as long as he does it. Or
right.
She does it. We try to discourage the paw because of the potential damage to the wall board around the light switch.
Right. Well, why don't you tell me about a situation? You said off air there was a fellow named James with Abel.
Yes.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about them?
Okay. James and Abel. James is a United States Marine, medically retired. And he applied for and was given Abel. And after about 2 years of working with Abel, he called us up one day and he said, you know, I'm really having some problems with him. Okay, tell us what's going on. So he would tell us that Abel's getting up in the middle of the night, wants to go outside, acts like he has to go potty. He goes outside, the dog sits down, and he's looking up at the sky. Dog's not doing anything. Now, James is getting really aggravated with this because it's interrupting his sleep. You know, is the dog just, you know, teasing him and messing with them or what? So we asked them if they had some time to come in because they live close by to us. We said, can you come in? Let's just sit down and talk. So we sat he and his wife down and started talking about things. And through what they were describing to us, we asked his wife to keep a journal. And the journal had to be, when Abel was waking James up to, quote, go outside, and what was going on with James at that time. Now, he is a veteran with post-traumatic stress. And for all practical purposes, they thought his PTSD was, for the most part, dealt with and manageable. What we were able to determine through the journals and the actions of the dog, that Abel was actually interrupting the nightmares that James was starting to have again because of his post-traumatic stress.
So he wasn't out there looking at the moon. He was picking up the biorhythms and maybe the moaning or groaning.
Purpose.
Wow.
Purpose. Wow. So that took the frustration level of James and his wife, I have to say, down where they were able to really reevaluate and go, okay, it's time for us to, you know, go back and talk to the medical professionals and see some things.
Medical professional probably loved the fact that Abel was around to assist.
Well, He did. And I'll tell you another one. They were up in Bethesda for a, you know, routine visit, more or less. And Abel, who is usually very well behaved, kept, and he walks that heel, the left side, kept crossing in front of James. And there again, James is getting very frustrated. He was at a counseling session with, and his wife was there, the counselor, James, and the dog. And the dog was restless and was going between the wife, the counselor, and James.
Right.
And the dog finally sat there and pawed the wife and scratched her arm pretty bad. But at that time, they were trying to determine if James was starting to have seizures. And because of the actions of the dog, the counselor at the time made the arrangements and they got him in for an MRI, James in for an MRI, like within hours. And they were able to determine that there was some seizure activity.
And so the dog picked up on that.
Yeah, we don't know how.
Well,
just that they're so in tune to their person.
Well, this happens all the time. A couple sessions ago, someone was talking not about service dogs, but pets in general. And there was this cat. I even thought I heard it on the news. There was this cat that was at a retirement facility, and it would go from room to room, and people loved the cat, you know, because, you know, your pets are just wonderful for old folks, especially if they're old or handicapped or whatever the situation was. And this cat would go into someone's room and sit on the bed, and they would die.
Yep.
This cat sensed, I guess, death. And after a while, you know, not a funny thing, but after a while, people didn't want to see the cat because they knew this cat was very accurate. And he would come into a room and he would sit and lay with a person right before they died. And like you said, with Abel, they pick up something, whether it's a pheromone change or whatever. It's amazing how acute animals are.
It is amazing. And I mean, my prior Airedale terrier, she passed away in October of 2013. We were an active pet therapy team visiting in our hospice care center. And she sat with more people and more families when their loved one was passing away than I can even count.
Yeah.
And it was a miracle just to see the gift she gave everybody, that dog was capable of doing that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just regular pets. I mean, they're so comforting in life. My, I've had several long-term dogs. My first was Pal. He was a Labrador Retriever, and I had him for 14 years from the time I was 4 until I was 18 when he died. It was like my brother died. Then I had Dinky, a little dachshund, and I had her for 14 years. And when she passed, I had to take her and put her down at the pet hospital, and they at the vet, and they gave me about a half an hour with her afterwards. And, you know, I cried like a baby, and it was, again, you're losing a loved one. I don't know what it would ever be like with, I have two cats right now. One's 22 years old. That's Sophie of Soap and Bean, and Jilly Bean's the bean of Soap and Bean. She's 6. We got her as a kitten to be company for Sophie because she lost her her dog, another 14-year-old, Chloe, who I had for such a long time. So I just love my pets, always have. I couldn't see ever being without pets.
I have to agree. I can't. We've had a house full, and our numbers are down some only because of, you know, natural aging or disease. And
pets, dogs, cats? What's the variety?
We have 5 in our house right now.
You have a house full.
Yeah, we have 2 Airedale Terriers. One is 9 years old. The other is 4 years old. Both came out of rescue. We have a 25-pound terrier. She's a terrier mix. She's a schnauzer something mix.
Okay.
She pretty much rules the roost.
Rules the roost.
Or she think she does. And then there's two Labrador retrievers. One is my husband's Rick's service dog, Titus. And the other one is Angel. She's actually, don't tell her legally, she belongs to the company. she doesn't know that because she's kind of embedded herself in my heart.
Now, is your dog that you were just talking about a service dog in training or?
Titus is fully trained. Okay. He serves Rick because Rick has some, you know, mobility issues, and that kind of is what also drove him into this business because he knew. And that a number of people in the service dog industry that are trainers have become trainers because of relying on a service dog themselves.
Right.
So, now, yeah. And the other girl is just, she's our what we call our program dog. So if a school wants a presentation in our area, or a
program dog. She comes to the programs.
Yeah, she goes out and she does the dog and pony show.
Okay, all right. So she's trained to do that, right. Now, what about Colleen and Uriah?
Uriah. Well, Colleen and Uriah, Colleen is, you know, again, a U.S. Navy veteran, post-traumatic stress. She received Uriah earlier this year. And, of course, when our clients receive their dogs, we tell them to go home. Don't do a lot. We want you to go on very short outings. We don't want you out for hours at a time while you learn to use your skills and bond together as a team. Well, about 4 days into their new life at home together, Colleen took Uriah out to PetSmart to get something. And that was good. Things were going so well. She felt comfortable using some of the skills Uriah was taught to do, such as rise to the front of her if she was feeling, the world was coming in on her, Colleen, that is. And then after they left PetSmart, they decided to go to, the Walmart. And she ended up wandering around Walmart for something like 2 hours. This is a woman that prior to getting her service dog never went out without her sister or her husband.
Wow.
And in the next coming months, she's going to travel out to Ohio to participate in an event that's being held for us by a foundation out there to represent our organization for us.
Cool.
Something she never would have thought about without that dog by her side.
Well, that's amazing. Now, why don't you tell me your company? You said there are about 60 companies around the country that have accreditation, and you certainly have that. And why don't you tell me here in our last minute a little bit about your accreditation?
Well, accreditation really is a review by your peers, so of other service dog organizations that review your standards of practice. And it has to do with being a nonprofit and being a service dog provider. And they review everything from your office procedures to your procedures working with your clients, your application procedures, how you care for your dogs in training, how you care for the dogs are cared for after they're placed. So really it's a very comprehensive and detailed review of your standards of practice in the service dog industry. There are only about 60 accredited organizations in the United States. So we are the ones that subscribe and have agreed to a standard of a minimum standard of practice on how the dogs are trained, how they're treated, how we interact with our clients, how we maintain our clients' confidentiality. As you well noticed, I only gave you first names. So it sort of covers everything we do. And our accreditation is valid for a period of 5 years, and we will have to go through the process again, be inspected by our peers. They'll review our training practices and protocols.
Gotcha.
And it's quite expensive.
Well, believe it or not, we're out of time, Pat.
We're out of time.
Can you believe
thank you. I can't.
Well, I want to thank Pat Hairston again of Canines for Service for being our guest here on Pet Chat. We are 1180 WFYL, just Jacques Doolittle, and we'll see you next week.
It's and you speak rhinoceros, I'd say of carcerous, can't you?
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.